Welcome to episode 15 of Talking Pathways. I'm delighted to be joined by Danny Gray, who is head of our Pathways platform, the Practitioners Programme, and also content.
Good to be here.
Great to have you, Danny. We are going to be bouncing backwards and forwards today because we've got a spin on how we are going to be doing Talking Pathways today. Normally, I'm the one that does the interviews, but actually, we're going to turn that on its head. And you're actually going to interview me around this subject of why you've got to sack your customers. So I'm going to hand over to you, and I'm going to go into the opposite seat to what I'm normally in, and let's see where this conversation goes.
Well, do you know what? I think this could be dangerous. After 10 years, you've finally given me a chance to get my own back and give you a good grilling. So I'm looking forward to the opportunity of putting you on the spot. But you know what? What a great title. What a great title. Why you have got to sack your customers. I mean, if that in itself doesn't make your ears prick up and want to listen, I don't know what does. But interesting, provocative title. Come on, where are we going with this?
Oh, that's a great opening question. You're a natural at this, Danny. So it's great to be in the spotlight on the other, and in the other seat. And in terms of where we're going with this, you're right, it is a provocative title. It is edgy, and it's designed to be, because the title is designed to stop people in their mental tracks and really bath in what you and I are going to be talking about for the next 30 or 40 minutes, because it's so important, whatever stage you're at on your business growth journey. And in your early years in business, Danny, you tend to try to be everything to every customer. So your product proposition, whether it's services or a physical product, you will stretch and you will make it fit to customers' requirements. You'll do different variants of it because you want to satisfy customers. You will go and attract any kind of customer. Any customer is a great customer, right, in the early stages of your business. You're just so happy to have customers. But I think what you learn quickly, and I wish I'd learned this earlier in my journey in the businesses that I grew, because it would have certainly saved me a lot of pain, a lot of burned mental calories, a lot of resources and time being burned in the wrong areas. That what you learn really quickly, which is why the title of this session is so important, is that you learn quickly to attract the right customers. There's a key difference, the right customers. And by the right customers, I mean customers who will do three things. They will stay, they will say and pay. They're customers who, when they buy your products and services, they absolutely love them and they will stay forever. They will do repeat purchases and keep coming back time and time again. They say great things about you. And as you know, you and I talk a lot about customer advocacy, and the best sales force you have is not actually people working in you or for your business. The best sales force you have are your customers who are delighted with your products and services, delighted with the service experience you deliver, and therefore they are your raving fans and they tell everybody about you, your business. They talk you up all the time, and therefore they create a torrent of lead opportunities into your business. And then the third facet of this is not only do they stay, say, they pay their bills on time. And from a commercial perspective, they are high value, high profitable customers who pay on time, which is, of course, essential because cash is king. Cash is the oxygen that feeds our businesses. So I'm a real passionate believer that you've got to focus on the right customers. And for people who are at an early stage in their businesses, they need to learn this lesson quickly. And for people with an established business, hence the title for today's session, why you've got to sack your customers, this might be your opportunity to do a cleansing of your customer stroke client base with where you and I are going to go deeper with this subject in a moment. So I guess in essence, that's the essence. Right customers is what we're talking about today.
I mean, that in itself, you know, that what makes a right customer, or what are the benefits of the right customer? And just to pull on a few things that you said there that really kind of resonated with me. First of all, the concept that you create, that they become raving fans. That's a great customer, isn't it? You know, when the customer is your sales force and they go out and they are, you use the word advocates, you know, because they're delighted what you do for them. And so they then want to share that with somebody else and tell somebody else about it. But also those concept, those other sort of more subtle benefits of the right customer, such as, you know, in particular in a B2B world, that they pay on time, or they, you know, they engage with you across a breadth of different things that they want to buy from you. They're keen. It's more the partnership relationship type way of working rather than a transactional kind of way of working.
Are you spot on? And you've just hit the nail on the head. It's that partnership relational, and we'll talk more about relational in a moment. But I always think about it like this, Danny, that it's a two-way street. Mm. This is not one-way traffic.
No.
It is about customers liking your brand, liking you, liking the products and services that you provide, and want to avail themselves of your products and services versus your competitions. But also, and this is the bit that we miss, it's about you choosing, and life is about choices, the customers that you want to work with as well. And that's why I think of it as a two-way, it's a partnership, and your language about partnership is absolutely right. But it is about what I call the triple win. And most people talk about how you create a win-win in life, but I talk about how do you create a win for your business? How do you create a win for the customer? But most importantly, the third of the triple win is, how do you create a win in terms of the long-term lifetime value of the relationship? Because as we both know, acquiring customers is a costly exercise. Mm. And therefore, when you do acquire them, you want to develop deep, meaningful relationships where the customers keep coming back. And of course, where we've talked about, where they are the raving fans in terms of talking you up and being your sales force out there in the marketplace every single day. So I think it's all about, for me, that triple win, but recognizing it's a choice, and it's a two-way process. You choosing your customers, but your customers choosing you, your products and your services as well.
Fantastic. So, I mean, I've often, you know, involved myself in conversations with you around, you know, what the customer or client headhunting strategy is, you know, and how you're going to go about it. How does that fit around this? How does it interlace with what we're talking about today?
Great question. You're on it today, aren't you, with your questions?
All over it.
on it like a bonnet. No, it is a great question. And for me, that's another evolution of taking this whole concept deeper in terms of, and most importantly, the practical application in for our listeners in their businesses. So everybody listening to this Talking Pathways episode today can take this concept and use it in their business. So the client or customer, depending on whether you use client or customer in your business, headhunting absolutely builds on that mindset shift of you choosing the customers that you want to work with. And when you think about creating your customer client headhunting program, it puts you in the driver's seat. It puts you on the front foot. And what you are doing is you're putting out there in the ether, this is the profile of customer that we really want to work with. And that's about the personas. What's the demographic and the psychographic profile? So demographic, what age are they? Who buys? Psychographic profile, why do they buy? Why should they choose you over and above your competition? And most people don't spend enough time thinking about the demographics and the psychographics. Who buys, why they buy? And really drilling down into building their ideal persona or ideal profile of the customer that they want to work with or client. And when you have that, then you can become really targeted. You can become really pointed. It's like a pincer movement where you are locking in the marketplace on that profile of customer or clients that you really want to work with. So I would urge everybody, and it's something that we talk about on the Pathways platform. It's something that you and I talk about when we are consulting with clients, to really put them in that different mindset enablement about create, carve out, shape your client stroke customer headhunting program, and be specific and focused, laser beam focus on that profile of customer that is absolutely right for you and your business.
I always really like in this, when we talk about this, the persona piece, you know, drawing out that pen portrait of who your customer is, you know, what do they look like? All the things that you capture, what part of the market do they sit in? Why do they buy? You know, how would you know them if they walk past you in the street? What sort of makes that individual stand out for your business? And I think that for me really fits really well in this, because that helps you. Does it? I mean, that's probably a better, more like a question. That surely then helps you to determine, go back to the point of the right customer. Because you could almost say, right, here's all my customers. How do they map into this ideal profile that I want? And how many do and how many don't?
Yeah, and again, Dan, there's a really simple exercise that our listeners can do off the back of this in shaping their client or customer headhunting program. So what they need to do is go and identify who do they think are their top dozen or two dozen customers and clients that they already have. And if they started to do what you talked about, look at that pen portrait, look at that persona of those customers, what are the traits? What's the age profile? What's their geographic location? If they went and asked them the question about why they choose to buy and be a customer of your business, what are the answers that they get? Because what you can do is draw all that insight out, and you will be amazed how many, number one, businesses have not even done that simple exercise that really they intrinsically, at a deep, meaningful level, understand their top existing customers that they already have. Because once you build that persona, once you build out that pen portrait, then you can start to think about, right, how do we replicate that? How do we get more of those kinds of customers and clients? How do we start to think about our marketing? If that's what they're saying is the reasons why they buy from us, how can we start to use that in our marketing and make sure that we are talking to clients and customers in a language that's going to chime and really resonate with them? So I think there's two simple actions that people can take away from today. One, go and create your client customer headhunting program. And the key enablement to be able to do that is start to profile what you see as your high value, loyal, committed customers that you already have, whether that's a dozen, two dozen, three dozen, and start to really draw out the profile of why they are great customers or clients of your business today.
Excellent. Very, very, very good. I like that. Two great points and really simple. I mean, I'm always keen to find things to say, you know, talk about the insight or what it's telling us. You know, that information is there in front of us, isn't it? It's not that this is really complicated and you've got to spend months and months and months, as you rightly say, top 12, 24, whatever it may be, customers. That's probably got the answers that you are looking for to do this really, really well.
There's one key point in there, Danny, that I think don't overlook. And there will be some absolute tangible traits like the age profile or whether they're male or female. You'll get the really hardwired, tangible facets. But there's one bit I don't think that you should overlook when you're creating and attracting the right customers, which is about the values match. And it's just like with your people strategy. You know, when you think about a robust people strategy and building your talent density today, it's about attracting the right people. And that's not just about the technical skills that they bring to your team. It's about it's the balance of the IQ versus the EQ. It's their emotional, it's their cultural fit, it's their values alignment. And definitely in your people strategy, interviews today should and are more weighted towards getting that cultural alignment and cultural fit right. And I think the same applies with your customers. When you get the values, and you've heard me say this expression before, when the values match, all the major problems become minor.
Yeah.
When there's a misalignment in values, all the minor problems become major. Now, as I'm saying that, let me just repeat that because I think it's so important. You've got to get alignment of values with your customers just like you would with attracting the right talent of people that you want to work with, recruit, and have in your business. When the values match, all the major problems become minor. When they don't match, all the minor problems become major. And as you're starting to think about that quote and translate that into your business, so what do I mean by that? When you think about your business, I'm sure where you have the greatest challenges are when you peel back all the layers, there is a misalignment of values with the people. And certainly the customers, all the minor problems do become major. They moan and gripe about the smallest things. They are time bandits because they're constantly on the phone chasing up about this. They are the emotional vacuums that might be negative, who suck the life out of you. And they're the customers who consume most of your time. And the scary thing is, they're probably the ones that are the least profitable as well.
Yes.
So I think not only when you are profiling the right customers, you've got to get the right value match or you will. And that's why for me, you've got to sack some of your customers because they are sucking the life out of your business. Your cost to serve is off the scale in terms of having to look after them. You know, they will be the ones who are always on the phone, just like we talk about in terms of griping and moaning. So therefore, I'm sure as people are listening to this, they're going, oh my God, Royston, Danny, we have got loads of those in our business. I need to do something about them.
There's a really interesting part of the book, How to Think Like Steve Jobs. Who's the author escapes me at this moment, but really, really interesting book. And it was written by a chap who worked alongside Steve Jobs during the early days of rolling out the first iPhone. And he recalls, you know, Steve Jobs saying, you know, there is, I think if I remember rightly, it was about 60-40, he said 60% of the population will really want to buy our product and 40% won't. And so let's not go after the 40% that don't want to buy it and try and make them buy it, because they'll just be unhappy anyway that we made them buy it. And he really sort of, I remember this chap saying it completely throws the customer is always right or the customer is king in the air, because that really is disruptive, isn't it? By saying, no, the customer's not always right. They're not, because of what you've just said.
No, and you're spot on, and it is. People have talked about that for years, the customer's always right and customer is king. And I absolutely, it's, and the way that you've articulated LinkedIn, Steve Jobs and so forth, absolutely spot on. I think that's a myth. I think it's a trait that we fall into. And if you followed that principle, then you would be tolerant of customers who have got the wrong values match and not contributing and buying the products and services or using them in the way that you want them to be used, and are consuming the time of you and your people and other time stealers and time bandits, and they're the least profitable. So yeah, for me, call them, get rid of them. And I know for small businesses that might be voiced, and we're really finding it hard to get customers and clients as it is, let alone you talking about culling some of them. But believe me, you will, over time, it will be such a cathartic experience. And what it does do is it frees up your time to focus on attracting the customers and clients that you really want, who will add value.
Well, that to me is the point, isn't it? You talk there about, you know, maybe a business that is saying, blinking out, I haven't got so many customers that I can afford to get rid of some. But isn't that actually the point? Because it's about then investing that time that you get back on the right customers and getting more of the right customers that absorb less of the time, as you rightly say, that don't drain on your resources or drive your pricing down, and you spend more time debating over, you know, a small amount of adjustment in price than actually delivering what it is that you can deliver for them to get the best possible return.
100%. And the 80-20 principle, I think, is really interesting dynamic. Pareto's 80-20. And we probably all know Pareto's 80-20 rule for 80% of your profit probably come from 20% of your customers. And again, when you go and look at those a dozen or two dozen absolute key profile customers or clients in your business that you really want to work with, I bet when you analyze the profitability, Pareto's 80-20 will not be far away. But I think spinning that and relating it to customers is absolutely key. And I think the 80-20 principle breaks down like this, that 20% are your most profitable customers at the top, 70% are in the middle category, and then 10% are probably, as a crude rule of thumb, are those real disruptive customers and clients where there is the misalignment of values that probably you need to cull. And the challenge is that what happens in most businesses, where does most of the time go? It doesn't go on deepening the relationship with the top 20% of customers and really honing in on the retention strategies, recognizing if you lose them, then it's going to have a massive impact on your business and your profitability. Where you get sucked in unconsciously is dealing with that bottom 10%, because they're the ones who are on the phone all the time. And it's the classic, isn't it, Danny, in life? Who screams loudest gets the most attention.
Yeah.
And your loyal customers are probably not the ones who need... are really needy of your time, the bottom 10% are. So most businesses are disproportionately allocating time to the wrong segments of customers that they've got, and they're not putting the focus in the right areas. And I know when people are listening to this now, they're going to be thinking, God, Royston, this is so basic, but you are so right. We are falling into this trap in our business, which is why you can probably detect my passion about this whole subject of why you've got to sack some of your customers. So harness the relationship with your top 20%, retain those whatever it takes, invest the time in nurturing the relationships with your top 20%, because they're your most profitable customers. Deal with the 10% quickly, and we'll talk about how you deal with those. And then in that middle category, you've got this 70%. And the way I think about the 70%, Danny, is this, that 20% of that 70% are potentially part of that top category of your 20% of customers. And what you've got to do is identify those and think about how do we move them further up the value ladder? How do we, through investing in nurturing the relationships, how do we kick them on, get them to buy more products and services, move them up the value ladder? So actually, your business is an 80-20. You've got a 60-40 or a 70-30 in terms of that high value premium band of customers that you've created in your business. Out that 70%, so that's 20%. 40% will always be your hearts and souls, as I call them, customers who will avail themselves of your products or services, but may not ever become your true raving fans. And then the bottom 10% are the potential, what I call the sliders, that potentially will slip down. And you've got to be conscious of those not falling into that camp of the bottom 10% that suck your life out of your business. And then the final spin on it, I would say, Danny, is that from a turning your customers into your sales force, those top 20% or 30%, however you categorize it, of your high value, loyal customers, proactively solicit referrals from them on a regular basis and make sure you are not just reactively, but you are proactively turning them into your sales force, because that is the torrent of high quality leads that you can drive into your business.
You know, that, I mean, that just for me is absolutely captures the essence of this, because I have on numerous occasions seen businesses focused on that bottom 10% to the absolute detriment of the potentials.
Yes.
So they know that they know their high value customers are, right? And they make sure that they don't neglect them. But they then, the second on the list is then this disruptive headaches that we've described, but that is at the cost of developing those potentials who maybe do need a little bit more time and effort. But if they got that little bit more time and effort, could easily, as you rightly say, form part of that high performing or high potential side of the organization. But left, you know, because they kind of almost feel they feel left out. They feel like they're almost second best to the best. And actually they're not. They're much more important than somebody is getting the attention.
100%. So again, that 80-20 principle, split down with 80-20 and then taking the 20-70-10 and then analysing the 70% into 20-40-10. It's such a simple model and it's so practical, and it allows you to really then start to think about where you should and yes, will be focusing your time moving forward, aligned to what we're talking about here. It's so critical. I remember, and it is about once you get into this zone of understanding about, one, attracting the right clients. I remember being in an interview with a massive telecoms business, and we got down to the final two potential partners for this big telecoms business. And I remember being sat in doing a final meeting with the MD of the business. And he was talking about people, and he was saying, you know, we need to really develop our people, get them to where they need to be. But he said, you know, at the end of the day, for me, it's all about, I don't care if we burn them out, we've got to drive them hard. And what came across really clear was there's a misalignment in terms of how you thought about people and how you get the most out of people. My values did not match with his. So I stood up, said, unfortunately, we're not the partner for you, and walked out the office. His absolute tongue dropped. His chin hit the desk, because nobody had ever turned him down or said, well, I'm not going to work with you, you're not the right partner for us. And I got a phone call afterwards from the head of HR. I was like, Royston, what are you doing? And I talked to him about it and said, we work with clients where we believe we can make a difference, but there's got to be a matching of values. Yeah. If there's not, we walk away. It's as simple as that. Now you might go, well, Royston, you're in a fortunate position with your business where you can do that. But no, we've got to the fortunate position where we are with our business because we've always adopted that approach.
Well, there's also that situation that's telling you an awful lot about them, yes, as a business. And then go back to, you know, it's like the hindsight is a marvelous thing. You know, people are probably listening and thinking, well, it would be great to have known what my customer was going to become difficult before they even became a customer, in which case I wouldn't be in this situation. But actually, those are the indications, aren't they? Those are the signs that if this is where we are now, in the future, this is going to be a constant rough road for us to venture down, because there isn't the flow of thinking, values, shared beliefs, and those types of things that are going to get us there.
And Danny, that's a brilliant point to make. And again, let's make this really practical for our listeners in terms of proactively, what are some of the telltale signs that they can start to look for, yeah, A, in existing clients, but also in potential new customers or clients that will allow them to start to understand whether they're going to be the right customer? And the way that I badge that up is through fundamentally understanding the difference between a transactional customer versus a relational customer. So let me give you my take on the different traits of a transactional versus a relational customer. And what this will give you is almost a mental checklist that you can use, again, either with existing customers and clients or with potential new customers or clients, to see whether they fit that box and tick that box of being the right customer for you moving forward. So when I talk about a transactional customer, some of the traits are that they think short term. It's all about immediacy. It's all about being here in the moment. That they are focused on getting the most benefit for the least money. Notice the key language in there. And to a degree, they enjoy the process of research and negotiation and comparison shopping. So these will be the people who've gone away and they've researched loads of providers, that they come to you and almost, they're almost coming to tell you, they think they know more about your product or service than, yes, than you do. And these are dangerous people. And the challenge is when somebody is a avid research and negotiation and comparison shopping is, they become massively price sensitive and they're not looking for an expert because they plan on being their own expert and they're enjoying the process. And that is a dangerous customer. That for me puts a massive alarm bell up. And the challenge is that kind of customer is committed to buying from whoever is willing to accept the lowest profit. So therefore, when you start to unpack these traits, it's no surprise where they sit in your pecking order in terms of the least most profitable customers. And they don't want to hear about service. They don't want to hear about how many years you've been in business. They don't want to hear about the intangibles of your value proposition. All they want to know is, what have you done for me today? Mm. So I'm sure as our listeners are taking that transactional customer, I'm sure that it will chime with them. They can think of existing customers or potential conversations they have at the front end where some of those traits manifest themselves. And what I would say is, in that instance, there should be an alarm bell that's starting to flag or ring in their heads.
Absolutely. You know, it's for me, that in itself just helps us therefore start to establish really early on, before there's been any exchange of contracts, money or anything else, helps to really identify where they're at. Now, you've touched on there, you know, applying both this to, you know, new customers or clients that come through the door. You've also talked about identifying that within your existing customer or client portfolio. But let's say we've done that. We've identified that group, bottom 10%, whatever it is, whatever it turns out to be. What do we do with them? Do we just persevere and say, well, there we are where we are? Or do we actually do what you started this podcast about, which is sack them, get rid of them?
It's a great question. So I think there's a couple of things you can do. Number one, there might be some customers or clients that you just know absolutely, categorically, 100% fall in that bucket and you do just need to sack them. You need to get rid of them. So there might be a cleansing of your customer base that you need to do. And believe me, when you do it, and that might not be many customers or clients, Danny, that might be a handful. It might be more in some businesses. But you've got to cut them out because they are derailing and stifling your ability to focus on the right customers, focus on growing your business, and they're consuming your valuable resource in terms of that could be allocated in other ways. So I think one, you've got to go and do the cleansing exercise and look if there's any customers that you want to take out. The second then is to start to think about how do you potentially turn transactional customers into relational customers? So what we haven't talked about yet is the profile of the relational customer, which is the customer or the client who is looking for an expert, somebody they can trust, trust being the key word, that they are time poor and therefore they want somebody who is going to tell them straight what needs to be done and how you can solve their problem. They don't have time. They consider time spent shopping to be part of the purchase price, and therefore they're willing to spend more money to save time. They're not as price sensitive. They will pay a premium or a price where they value the service that they're getting. They just want you to tell them directly, candidly what it is that they need, solve the problems for them, and they will become your raving fans and those customers, as we talked about, the right customers who stay, say, and pay. So the question is about how you turn some of your transactional customers into relational customers. That might be by about engaging with them. That might be about additional products and services that you can sell, educating them on the real benefits, both tangible and intangible, of your products and services. So there's far too many strategies that we can talk about today in terms of how you start to think about translating them, but also it applies to new customers as well. Start to think about how you do attract more of the... So what you don't want to do, Dan, is compound the problem that you've got in your business today by bringing in more transactional customers who don't fit the profile. So for me, it's about locking your front door closed, making sure that you, moving forward, bring in the right customers into your business, and then you do this cleansing, recalibration exercise of your existing client base through the 80-20 principle, through identifying the right persona and portrait of customers, through starting to be more conscious about attracting the right customers. And yes, in that process might be a cleansing that you do linked to the title of this episode of Talking Pathways. There might be time to sack some of your customers.
There's an interesting concept there, isn't there, of being front door of your business locked firmly shut with a gatekeeper that assesses the suitability of the customer before they're even allowed in.
Yeah.
You could find a massive queue of people desperate to want to be a part of that organisation. There's a real turn on its head, isn't there?
Oh, and Danny, you're right. But that happens with existing customers as well. So I know some clients who've gone and had conversations with customers and they've said to them, you're not the right profile. And the customer's absolutely devastated. They're yeah. like, what do you mean? And suddenly they start to have conversations like, I really value what you do and I really do this. I didn't realize I was behaving like that. And suddenly you can turn what you see as being the customer from hell into the right customer profile through the conversation and the candid conversation. And I've seen that happen as well. But you've got to hit it head on and be prepared to have those conversations.
Yes, you have. I really like that. That for me sounds like a, you know, just a really great way of also pushing the envelope on your business and really setting yourself up for success in the future. There's been, I've tried to capture as we've gone through, because actually I can see when we put this podcast into the platform, I'm going to create a little checklist to go with it, because I think there's an important reference point. So if I can just kind of try and capture the essence of all the different things we've talked about, and perhaps in a sequence, and I'll get your views on whether we've got this in the right order and if there's anything missing. So the first thing I think we need to do is to this profile your high value customers. So let's first of all know what we mean by the right customer. You know, what do they look like? So take our existing base, take, you said, top 12 dozen, two dozen, whatever it may be, and say, right, who are they? What are they? How do they work? Why do they buy? What makes them a high value customer? So we know who they are. Then once we've done that, we can create our client or customer headhunting strategy, because we can then say, right, we now know who we're looking for. Where do we go and find them? The third point is cleansing your existing customer base, because the first two points are all about new customers, but we can then use that insight to really look across our entire customer list and clean that up wherever we need to do so.
Yeah.
But with the proviso of the balance between transaction and relational. So in other words, it's yes, clean that base up, but is there an opportunity within some of those customers or clients to move them from being transactional to relational and become, you know, great ambassadors for your business? So for me, that kind of split between what we do to attract new, there's a real link between what we do with our existing. So four real key actions, if you like, I think.
I think that's a great summary, Danny. And just to add to that, kind of like the last point that you talked about there, use the 80-20 principle to do that exercise as well. And really think about the 20% of your top customers and do that analysis about whether they're your most profitable, because it will be somewhere in that category, 80-20 or 70-30, that's for sure. Who's in that middle band of that 70%, and where are the 20% of the future relational, high value, high ticket customers that you've got, and what are you doing to nurture them differently? Because you've got to have a different service experience and a different level of service that you're delivering for your most profitable customers versus your transactional, low profit customers. You can't treat every customer the same. No. And that's what a lot of businesses fall into. And I know that's a whole new subject in itself. So the only final point I would say is use that 80-20 as part of your exam, when you're examining and interrogating your existing client, customer book, portfolio, whatever language you use to do, and looking at that cleansing exercise. And then Danny, let me just give, I know we're short on time now, but let me just give one bonus idea as well, because this is a really simple thing that you can do. In future engagement conversations, and this can be both with new customers, potential new customers, but also existing customers, ask them the question. So for example, I might say to you, if you were looking to avail yourselves of my exec coaching or consultancy services, what's the three most important criteria in choosing an executive coach to work with for you, Danny? And what you do in asking that question is you're starting to understand whether the customer is more relational versus transactional. So if you went, oh, Royce, and it's about price, then I know I'm not going to be the right exec coach for you, because I'm not the cheapest exec coach in the marketplace. I'm Stella Artois mixed in with L'Oreal. So Stella Artois, reassuringly expensive, and L'Oreal because you're worth it. So that's where I want my brand to be positioned in the marketplace. So I would know that if price was your top factor in choosing an exec coach, I'd be thinking go somewhere else. But that question, and you can apply that question to anywhere. What's your three most important criteria when choosing an estate agency to work with? What's your three most important criteria when choosing this product or this service? It's a great question to ask that will allow you to start to understand where somebody sits on the transactional versus the relational scale. So against your checklist, that might be a bonus question that people can take away and use as well.
I really like that. I think that that's a really great question to be asking, because it is really validating your customer client against the things that matter most to you and to what you're trying to achieve. Yep. I mean, just a really great session. I've really enjoyed it. And despite, you know, you and I have spoke about this subject, you know, for hours and hours and hours over the many years of talking about different situations. But actually, when you get into it and you start to think about, so what's that sequence in? I found that really useful. So thank you very much indeed. Some great ideas, some good thinking, but also to go back to the starting point of this, is the provocative title, Why You Have Got to Sack Your Customers. Actually, it's quite clear why that is so important.
Yeah. And Danny, thank you. It's great being on the other side of the seat, and I've enjoyed kind of being interviewed as opposed to being the interviewer. But I agree. I think there's some really practical golden nuggets. If people are listening to this, they can absolutely translate this, relate it to their business, which is what we always try to achieve with Talking Pathways or in the Pathways platform or any of the stuff that we do, is making it practical, making it actionable, giving you real world ideas, strategies, tools, techniques, ways of thinking that will allow you to take the guesswork out of growing your business, to take the trial and error out of growing your business, and really accelerate you on a journey where you can take your 3 or 5 year business goals and ambitions that you want to do, and you can deliver those in 12 or 24 months. That's why we do what we do. That's what Talking Pathways is all about. And I think today's just another great demonstration of the practicality of what we do, how we do it, and most importantly, why we do it. So Danny, thank you for sitting in the hot seat as the interviewer today. And for our listeners, there you have it. Danny and I talking all about why you've got to sack your customers. Episode 15. If you like it, share it. I think every single business owner, business leader, business professional needs to listen to this. And what I'd urge you to do as well is, there's so many golden nuggets into this. Make sure you listen to it a few times so that you don't miss any of those actions. And as Danny says, we will do a tight action plan and steps that you can take out the back of this. So from Danny and I, from the Talking Pathways team, every success, and remember, you're only one pathway away from building the business of your dreams. Bye for now.
Thanks.